She was only a waitress in a highway cafe, poured coffee from dusk until dawn. But she was heartbroken 24 hours a day, for she longed for a trucker who'd gone.
Make it a corned beef on rye, she'd sing with a glee in her eye.
The headlights were burning,
the big wheels were turning,
her sweetheart would come by and by.
Kingi Friedman is a singer, songwriter, satirist, author, playwright, columnist, chess master, animal rights activist, and purveyor of his own brand of tequila.
Wait, that's not enough.
Is that not enough?
Not enough things.
All right. He also ran passionately, though unsuccessfully, to become governor of his home state of Texas, where he moved to as a kid from his native Chicago, Illinois. He's been called many things, likely bipolar among them, so it's no accident that he's now in the midst of his solo bipolar tour of the continent, which will bring him to the Linda right here in Albany tonight. He'll be crooning tunes, he'll be reading from his latest book, Heroes of a Texas Childhood, as well as from the recently released tell-all bio opus that he co-wrote with Billy Bob Thornton, The Billy Bob Tapes, A Cave Full of Secrets, focusing on the latter's phobias, life, loves, and movie career. In fact, Billy Bob Thornton will join us on the show tomorrow morning. This morning, though, we welcome the one and only Kingi Friedman to Studio A here at WAMC. Good morning, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. It's a great pleasure to have you here. I've been a big fan of yours. You've been on the show many, many times. We've talked about your books. We've talked about your different projects. We talked about your candidacy. So we've had a lot of lovely discussions with you. So it's very nice to have you here. How would you describe what it is that you do before an audience?
Well, I think bipolar is close to capturing it. It's a little profane and hopefully a little profound. And I kind of am the last nail that hasn't been hammered down, or one of them.
How have you remained that way, unhammered, as it were?
Just lucky, I guess. I'm not sure. We were just discussing this before the show that. If you tell a joke that's funny, it can come in, and then you run for political office. They deliberately pervert that joke to make it seem like you hate Hispanics or gays or blacks or the state of Texas, or you're making fun of things that Texans take great pride in. And they'll twist that, and they'll misrepresent you. And that's kind of... Now, that's kind of what's really bad and wrong about politics, and that's why good people don't get into it.
Although you did get into it, and I assume
I got into it, and I was painted as a racist,
right. Racist
just like Bill Clinton was.
Well, you know, and you heard the tape, and I have to say, you know, because it was recorded a long time ago, and you heard the tape, and you kind of cringed a little bit because you're absolutely right. In this politically correct society, you're just not used to hearing that kind of thing.
Well, the thing is, though, Joe. That just didn't pass the smell test with people outside of Texas, because they got Kingi using the N-word, and they sent it every place, and nobody picked it up, little stations, big stations, nobody outside of Texas. But the Texas media that they had in their pocket, they did. And so then you see the headline, is Friedman a racist? Well, you've already lost, you know, right there. I mean,
right. Is
he or is he not? They're already slamming you. And this, I think, is mostly coming from the Democrats because we were beating their guy. You know, now this is running as an independent.
Right.
Now, if you ran as a Democrat, you could definitely count, you know, in the primary, stuff like that happening. I'm already looking ahead. I mean, I'm saying if I ran in 2014, you'd have to get out ahead of this stuff. This is either true or it's not true. You know, and it's a question of whether you understand the concept of what a joke is.
Well, you know, and we were just, this interview hasn't aired yet, but I had a long conversation with Jesse Ventura, who is also a good friend of the show. He's been on a lot. He has a new book out, and he'll be with us in a few days. But, you know, he was saying that, look, he said, they never went after me for They never went after me for my politics. They never went after me for anything that had to do with issues. They always went after me about my past, whether I was a wrestler or whatever, as this I did or that I did. And it seems like you fell into the same thing. It was somebody running as an independent, and the two parties figured out how they could knock somebody out.
Gotcha.
Not on the issues, but on what it is that you were, what had been in your past. In your past, it was a humorist as a
they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore would be enough ammunition for them, because
right.
It's got racial slurs of all kinds, and has clearly become an anti-political correctness anthem. I mean, people understand that song. They yeah. understand that if Richard Pryor came into our studio, you and I really couldn't make him a big star today. We couldn't. I don't think America would
go for it, or yeah. Lenny Bruce, or anyone like
that's
that.
Right, or George Carlin.
Yeah. Let's
try to you and me produce Blazing Saddles today in Hollywood, you know? Blazing Saddles, the stage show, you know? I don't know, maybe it would be a hit, but it would certainly stir up a lot of, I think we'd have a hard time getting it made.
What I find
I mean, is this good? No, this is not good. This is what Barbara Jordan warned about in the 60s. This is political correctness of the worst kind.
But what I don't understand is that most people, for example, would go see a movie like that. Would go see Blazing Saddles and enjoy it. Most people would listen to your music or your song and would enjoy it. So it's not the people, but what is it about us then that say, oh, he shouldn't be saying that?
Well, our puritanical roots are showing. I don't see any value in what we. I think it's pathetic. It is a Barry Manilow society that we have today. We want to. You know what we want?
That's scary.
Let me tell you, Joe. We want to feel good for a short period of time. We want to hear something that's going to make us feel good for a short period of time. We don't really want to think.
Yeah. So when you actually get down to,
I mean, that doesn't mean that everybody can't go around. I could insult you in some way. You know, you can't. I mean, if there is a guy who's a homophobe and clearly hates everything that's gay, you know, well, fine. You know, I mean, let's call him what he is. You know, but everybody who does that is not. I mean, today, of course, you couldn't get away with any kind of joke about gays, even if it's really funny and true.
Now, I want to ask you, because you said that no good people get into politics, yet you wanted to get into it. I assume you would label yourself as a, you know, semi-good person.
I'm the only good person that ever got
right.
into politics. Now, I'll tell you, a great example is Jesse, because Jesse Ventura is a good man. He is a good human being and a lousy politician, because he'll tell you the truth. He'll tell you where to get off, you know?
Yeah.
And a real politician would never do that. And that's why I say that Jesse's kind of innocent, you know. He never realized that that wrestling is real and politics is fixed.
and I, when we had this conversation when you were running, and I just it seemed to me that if any state was going to elect you, it would have been Texas, right? I mean, it's just because Texas system is just screwed up. I mean,
Well, you're exactly right. Texas is in horrible shape, and, you know, 49th in education, all this kind of crap. It's got Rick Perry as governor. Most Texans today understand that the clown in the governor's mansion was not me. Rick Perry was warning us about. It's him. But, I mean, I think I could beat him today, yes. One of the biggest problems is an independent just can only win in a few states in America, and they are Vermont, Minnesota, Connecticut, little smaller states that have a good word-of-mouth thing going. Any big state has never had an independent win at a statewide level because the Democrats and Republicans are too well entrenched. And if I ran in 2014 for governor, it would be as a Democrat.
I asked Jesse this question, and I said, you know, so for voters, what do they do in November? And he said, well, I think they should vote Libertarian just to scare the bejesus out of the Democrats and Republicans. Would you agree with that?
Oh, it's never going to happen. I mean, I think almost all of us, everybody listening to this show, has a strong independent streak in them these days. We all realize George Washington was not wrong, that a lot of the problems in Washington are the two-party system and the way it's been wielded by our politicians. But it doesn't help me calling the two political parties the Crips and the Bloods is not going to help get me elected. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they're not going to like that.
Do you, but when you get on stage, it's mostly about, it's about you, it's telling stories, it's humor, it's not so much,
it's not
an overtly political
show. Oh, not at all. I mean, there's some of it. I do talk about, I talk a little bit about the, how much I admire Mitt Romney's traditional, his great belief, his deep belief in the traditional Mormon marriage doctrine, you know, which is not same sex, it's same six. Things like that.
Yeah. When you because this is basically you're doing what you started out doing, right? I mean, this is very similar to how you got started in the 70s, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a shock jock or something like that.
I
mean, if it fits and works into the fabric of what you're doing, if you have a song like Get Your Biscuits in the Oven and Your Buns in the Bed, either you're going to take great umbrage of this if you're a woman, you know, and you're a feminist, like they did at University of Buffalo in 1973, where we had the big altercation and we needed a police escort to get out of there alive, you know. The lesbians were beating up the Jew boys in that case. It was really... And then when you play that song and you hear it today, you think, Jesus, all this was over this?
And you identified, I mean, you were, it was Kinky Freeman and the Texas Jew Boys. So, yeah. I mean, just that alone got people.
Well, that got the Jews, got the Jews divided. A lot of young people saw it as a badge of honor and a cool thing to do. And a lot of them, and some of the older, more traditional Jewish types, say, who own chains of record stores, you know, refused to stock that record.
Yeah.
Or play that record. Sure, that happened.
You know, and of course, I always knew you when I first came to be a Kinky Freeman fan. It was reading your mysteries, reading the mysteries of the books that you wrote.
Well, you're a very discerning man.
Well, Joe, thank you very much for noticing. And you were the sleuth. You were the character in the book.
Well, every character in the book is real. The names are real. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you still write fiction, or do you not?
Well, the latest two books have been the Billy Bob book and the Willie book. The Willie book, Just As I Am, is out in October. And this book I actually had to work on some. So I had to do some writing on this book. The Billy Bob book, Billy Bob's book just poured out of him like Winston Churchill reciting stuff. You know, it was all just oral, like over a microphone. And it's incredible. I mean, try that sometime. I can't do that. You know, try to write a paragraph that you haven't, yeah, you know, that's just strictly oral, and it's not going to come out very cohesive. And he did it in such a way that it's extremely readable.
And it's very, very funny, and it's some great stories. And a lot of it is you know, sad and shocking, too, but there's some just beautiful stories in it. I got a kick because basically he was describing this process, but he had a studio. He took a microphone, brought the cord down, and basically just had you all sitting around.
Well, this is a problem because if like right now, I know I'm on a radio show.
Yeah.
So I'm doing stuff that I'm a little careful. Billy is more honest. I mean, in this book, in the Billy Bob tapes, he's saying I'm unhappy, I'm worried all the time. You know, I'm sad, I'm depressed. I mean, people don't say that in their celebrity biographies or autobiographies. They say, I've got no regrets. I'm very happy. I have a wonderful wife and great kids, and I've had some great success. Yeah, they all do. Even the ones that you thought were your heroes will give you a boring, happy spin on it.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to stay hungry and stay unhappy because he thinks he does his best work that way.
And he certainly seems to.
He does seem to, yeah.
It's called The Billy Bob Tapes, A Cave Full of Ghosts. So how did you actually write? What did you write on it? I mean, it's him talking and it's transcribed. Is that basically what you did?
Yeah, that's right. I more or less produced the book. I mean, it's Billy's book, but we didn't know that. We didn't know whether he was going to, you know, with Billy Bob, you still have a little sling blade back there, you know, in the back of his head somewhere. He may just go away in a movie set and say, to hell with this book. And then we're both, in that case, I would have had to write it.
Right.
Ghost write a room full of ghosts, a cave full of ghosts. But as it happened, he was so good with this stuff, and so much of it was really usable direct from his recording it. The real trick was making him comfortable and not having his friends there that have heard these stories 20 times. That will screw it up. So bringing in new people, new blood all the time, and people that are interested and that he can talk to, like a conversation, and tell them a story about growing up, you know, in Arkansas in this really povertous, you know, condition that he did. And that makes, I'm of two minds on this book. This is a real thinking man's book and thinking woman's book. I mean, this, for people that, that really want to know about a Thomas Jeffersonian kind of guy who can do, you know, the last guy we had who could direct, write, and star in something that's really good was probably Orson Welles.
Yeah.
All these wealthy pop stars try to do it, and it really sucks. I mean, you know, if you think about it, the last guy that did what he did with Sling Blade was Orson Welles with Citizen Kane.
And
I can't think of another movie like that. And the next closest would probably be Mel Gibson.
And it seems as though when you look at what it is that he has written and what it is that he has put out here, that in our conversation with him, as I said, that'll air tomorrow, he talks a lot about social media. He talks a lot about how this is really destroying things, and it seems like not that he blames it, but he certainly thinks that his career would be a lot different, and he would have been able to produce more things like Sling Blade, because like you were saying with Richard Pryor, he doesn't believe that Sling Blade could be made today.
No, I think he's right. Billy's main point here is that the audience has become the show. You know, there are no more heroes. And you look around, you won't see John Wayne coming up again, or John Lennon, or anybody named John. All you'll see is Justin Bieber and Lady Gaga, and they are what we call product. And I think he may have a point there. It would be really, really unfortunate if his point is true. But he is saying that when you try to make a movie, you and I want to make a movie, and we get the money, we're trying to get the money out of Hollywood for this great idea, and we've got the stars attached to the thing and everything. And we can't do it because every movie's a $150 million video game movie aimed at 14-year-olds. And the other big plot is some chubby kid with curly hair goes to Las Vegas, takes a goat to Las Vegas, and screws all the chorus girls. That's the other plot that you'll be seeing. Everything else, Joe, no way.
We have about 9-10 minutes left. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to bring some of your cohorts in here, and we'll talk to them, and you can introduce us to them and give us an idea of what will be happening tonight at the Linda. Okay?
Great.
Kingi Freeman is our guest. He is going to be at the Linda tonight. It is the Bipolar Tour. You can find out more by going to thelinda.com. We'll continue our conversation with the great Kingi Freeman after this short break. Kingi Freeman is our guest on the program. Kingi Freeman goes by Polar Comes to the Linda on Central Avenue in Albany tonight at 8 p.m. You can find out more information by going to thelinda.org. And Kingi, as I mentioned, you're going to have some friends on stage with you. We have two of them with us this morning. Introduce your cohorts in crime here.
Just say I have no friends. These are employees of mine.
These are employees. No, no friends, just employees. No.
These are two young people that are working on the show, and they've been going down just great on this thing. Brian Molnar from Jersey. Where are you from in New Jersey?
Lebanon Township, which is a small town and very close to Clinton.
Well, anyway, Brian has been I'm just wherever the hell he's from. I'm just saying that Brian has been terrific, and the audiences love this guy, and he's got some original songs, which is a rarity today to hear. And then we have Dr. Amy Love, who I originally brought as a doctor, a medical doctor, because this tour is 25 shows in 26 days. Yeah. I thought I may need a medical doctor. And then I realized the last guy who brought a doctor with him on tour was Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and we know how that turned out.
We know how that one turned out, and I don't know if that was the best idea. But she since plays the ukulele, and she's got some great stuff she's written that has been, I can't tell you how I describe it, can I? No.
No, probably
you
not.
You can't. Okay, but it goes over extremely well with the crowd, shall we say? Okay.
So, Brian, let us begin with you. What is it like to work with Kingi Freeman?
Well, it's a thrill, I'll tell you. I've been a fan since I was a teenager, and actually the first song I ever played live was Nashville Casualty in Life. I don't know if Kinky knows that or not, but it's really cool. It's a lot of fun, and like you said, the shows have been going great, and it's a big opportunity for me. So
now you're from Jersey, but you have a little Southern accent. Is that from hanging around him?
I think it's sitting next to him in the
car. Okay, all right. And Amy, so you how did you get this gig? How did this happen?
Well, Kinky and I met in Kerrville at the Kerrville Folk Festival, and then ran into each other the day after that at a radio station where he was doing an interview and I was playing some songs. He heard me play some songs, and it just worked out from there. I had been practicing medicine in Austin. I had a private practice there, and I had just shut it down thinking I wanted to focus on music. And so this is a great opportunity, and it's been a lot of fun.
What does that say about the healthcare system that you would shut it down for the very stable business of music?
Oh, I don't think it says anything about the healthcare system. I think it says more about my heart and what I needed to do.
Oh, good. Okay. It wasn't like I've had enough of this.
And oh, no. I love it, and I miss it, and I'm glad that I still get to use all the tools that I have. You know, I brought them along on tour. I'm keeping us sane and well, sleeping well as best I can. He laughed when I said sane, but I'm doing the best I can.
Now, we should mention, Kinky has a cigar in his mouth. Do you always keep that unlit, or do you light it up when you're not in a building?
Oh, yeah. I smoke whenever America lets me. And the female TSA agent asked me, is that thing lit? And I said, to which thing, madam, are you referring?
So you wouldn't advocate that, of course, doctor, the smoking of the cigar.
Well, you know, you pick your battles with your patients.
Well, the same thing about Amy Love is that she treats you as an individual. That's very different from doctors today, from the conventional medicine, you know.
So you've got, there's a Billy Bob book that we mentioned. You're doing the show tonight in here at the Linda in Albany. And, I just want people to know it's almost sold out. So if you're going to come and you want to go to thelinda.org as soon as you can and pick up your tickets, because they're going very quickly and we don't want you to be left out of this very cool performance. And then, there's a new book coming out in the fall. Is that?
Yeah, that's one with Willie Nelson called Just As I Am, in which I had to do some writing, actually.
Yeah.
But we both wrote about half the book. He wrote a little more than I did. And Willie is the hillbilly Dalai Lama, and people are going to like this book. So it's kind of James Thurber-ish, Ring Lardner-ish. I mean, he's very, very funny. And I think that'll surprise people, kind of the way his humor. He could have been a stand-up comic.
Well, humorous, but also very insightful, right? I mean, he is sort of
usually
a sage.
Usually, there is some wisdom there. He did give me some advice.
Depends on how much sage he's on, I guess.
He gave me some very good advice, Joe, before I got into politics. And I guess, since I think you asked this question, I can give you his advice.
Yes.
Well, maybe I shouldn't. But, well, okay, let me give it to you. This is just what he told me.
This is how we're going to end, so go ahead.
All right, it served me very well in life and in politics.
All right.
He says, Willie says, if you're going to have sex with an animal, always make it a horse. Because that way, if things don't work out, at least you know you've got a ride home.
And there you go. Kinky Friedman Goes Bipolar comes to the Linda on Central Avenue in Albany tonight at 8 p.m. You can find out more information by going to thelinda.org. Brian and Amy, have a great time. It seems like you're having a blast.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you both here. Thank you very much. And have a great time at the show tonight. Kinky, it's great to finally meet you. Have you on for all these times, and to finally have you in the studio is a real thrill. So have a great time tonight, and thank you very much.
Thanks.
Again, Kinky Friedman at the Linda tonight, thelinda.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.